As you see or might listen in some of these lectures of today and tomorrow, some people think that there is already a war going on, a war about intellectual property, a war about information, a war about information society. Things are changing. Data processing and internet networking, they changed from a minor issue for a few freaks, like me, like some of you, to a part of everyday life. Computers and programs are now almost everywhere. We've reached a critical mass, and this critical mass has consequences. What's on the agenda? On the agenda now is surveillance. I think you've all read about it. It's the dream of law enforcement about data mining. Those familiar with the e-business bubble that exploded a few years ago, that will come up now with law enforcement, and we'll see all the old arguments. All you have to do is to replace the word customer with the word criminal. Digital rights management, or as it should be better called, digital restriction management. Your PC owned by everybody, but just you. Because those who failed to adapt to internet and to networking, those who even have problems thinking about this new world of so-called new media, they try to go along with their old business models, and networking is in their way. Patents, well, the EPO, the European Patent Office, still thinks that its database of human knowledge will grow faster than the internet. It's information economy versus information society. In information economy, you are a good. You are a consumer, and what they are after is the money in your pocket. Too much progress is destabilization in that world. Too much progress means not being able to calculate, not having good business plans. So law must be applied so that development is slow and stable. And of course, those of you who are really creative must stay away from computers. Right now, while we are talking, someone is lobbying to steal what is already yours. Someone writes a proposal to terrorize users away from computers. Not only in France. With all these users scared away from computers, with programmers forced away from computers, with computers not being owned by the people who get them from the shops, with laws and content industry behind our neck, the information society will be replaced by something we think it's a nightmare. And there is just one way. Let us all go against these cyber terrorists like Sony. We can do it. Yes, we have software patents. The first step was done. And these future hacks are about communication. These future hacks we need are about overcoming the communication gap between the information society, between computer people, like me, like you, like us, and the so-called establishment. Decision makers, whatever. It's about overcoming these communication hassles and about developing a somewhat common view. Important, there is a fine line between public relation and propaganda. And a war for hearts and minds is, it's a little bit as a speed seduction on speed. It's absolutely hopeless because it's not more than lying. Also leave the war in their heads. When the Business Software Alliance calls for the war against someone, we don't have to, because truth is our main ally, and the most valuable resource for communication is established trust. The software patents case was won because of trust. The trust of decision makers into people from FFII or others. And to establish all that, what I try to present you is one misguided model out of others that should help you if you communicate, if you write blogs, if you're doing anything that has to do with information you give away. The first thing is, in that model, items, like in this puzzle, are values, thoughts, rules. How is someone thinking about a specific issue? And what right does this person apply to him? It's like as if this stone in the puzzle would be something like, how important is child education for you? It's child education and all the values you apply to that. And items are bound together like neurons in networks. In fact, this is just another view on something that could also be viewed as a neuronal network. A transmission is information one partner sends to another, and of course hoping that it creates some kind of foreseeable effect, which is not always happen. Messages are parts of it, and it are requests to either present one of these items or change items. It's like asking someone, hey, what are you thinking about children education? What are you thinking about free software? What are you thinking about Microsoft? And transmissions can have from zero to many messages. Transmissions like news with zero value are very dangerous because people tend to invent their own messages into it. So if you give someone an empty bubble, he or she will try to fill it with something that makes sense from her point of view. Messages are evaluated in context to other messages, in context to the same message, and to already learned items. An explanation. Let's say that what we want to transmit is this one. We want to tell someone that a system like Echelon is spying on the whole European Union. The problem is, with these two in place, like this one, oh, the US is our best friend, this item will not fit into that hole. So the first and important steps are changing these things. That is one of the reasons why direct messages from computer people so rarely get heard in other societies or in other communities. Because even if this one is correct, the problem is that the reality of other persons is not able to make this one a piece of the puzzle. So people live in different realities. And the reality of the communication partners plays an important role about the way these persons communicate. And the more the realities differ, the harder it is to do communication. Because the harder it is to address items in the puzzle directly. People always tend to stick to their own reality. They communicate always the same way. And they try it as they are used to it from their daily behavior. Respecting these details, the details of the reality of the person you are communicating with, makes it easier. Because people tend to use the messages they are used to and to address items they know. In practice, in news, a reader assumes that the content is relevant and makes sense, more or less. But the less contradiction the messages have in the whole text, and the better it fits to the day-to-day experience of the reader, the easier the reading is. It's not about understanding it. It begins with the reading of the text. Persons read a text easier if it fits in their reality. And the easier the text is read, the more worth a person applies to it. All these transmissions have messages. The primary message is the first visible content. It's the headline. It's what almost all people read as news. And it carries all of the important payload in small transmissions, like TV. The secondary message, with secondary messages, the rest of information is transmitted, and it is almost impossible to communicate without, because it's how the text looks like, it's the writing style, it's the clothing, it's even... Most of you will recognize if a text is written in a word processor or in LaTeX. This is a classical secondary message. It can be used, or it should be used, and mostly it is, to support the primary message. And in campaigns, when you group several transmissions in one group, then it makes sense to put the real payload in the secondary message and using easy primary messages. Why? Because sometimes you have to address other areas, and you can stick what you really want to say in the secondary message. It's not an easy message to tell someone that, well, some people of the patent office do not know what they are talking about. And it's not easy to tell a diplomat that his patent office people do not tell the truth. This is something that in the first run has to be addressed in secondary messages. Inventing any kind of primary message about what to talk about and just leave the real content to secondary messages. There's also something called subliminals. They are often used in marketing campaigns. Like, well, women are happier when the clothes is more white. They sound promising, but they are not useful in practice outside of selling something. But it is very important not to send wrong subliminals. And there is another point. This point is about lying, and it's very important. Lies have a very, very high cost of ownership. Lies must be maintained. One of the main errors of the European Patent Office was lying about software patents. They had a plot. They had a plot about harmonization of the worldwide patent offices. That's not a really bad plan. That's something we could argue, that's something we could talk about. But because they started lying about software patents, they were unable to talk about their original plan, and they were bound to maintaining that lie, which they failed. They are very costly, and mostly it's not needed, because it's more or less the job of others, like patent offices or Sony or whatever. So if you are writing, if you are sending out messages, you need some kind of basic structure. the basic W's, who are you, what do you want, why do you want that? And here it is very important to be clear about that. Also, try to get an impression about whom you are communicating with. Because it makes no sense to talk to politicians or to government persons or to people from the economy with the words we are talking here, with the phrases we are using here, because they have no chance to understand them. There is something called mantras. Mantras are basic checks. Mantras is something that allow you to check a text or a message or something you send out. And you have to prepare for that in choosing a stereotype, something. Who are you and what kind of figure you can think about is able to express that. Maybe, well, hero in shining armor, or being a poor person, always hit by the big government. Do you cry for help? Do you just making some announcements? What is your usual behavior? What is your viewpoint on a specific topic? Is the topic good? Is it bad? What's your mood with that? Are you angry, frightened? Are you more amused? Are you in that area? Do you have distance? This is about creating some kind of virtual person, some virtual identity that should reflect you or the organization you are writing for, because these properties should now merge into mantras, questions. Is this really the shining hero speaking? Is it really the behavior of that virtual entity? Is it really that viewpoint? Is it the mood? And every mantra is a simple set of questions, also for one transmission channel, which means if you communicate with different targets, or let's say partners, then you might have different moods, different behavior with that communication peers. But of course you should not change your viewpoints. Not saying to one that data retention is very cool and that you like it, and on the other hand saying to other people that it is the baddest thing that you've heard of. There are some kind of questions you should ask, like, are these really the words of this hero in shining armor? Who is, on the long run, the winner? Who is on the loose? What is my mood about? The basic ingredients of a message is a clear vision of what you want to do, what you want to achieve, and what you want to talk about. Because messages must be very short. What is the content of it? What do you want to deliver? And what is the format? Note that there are some standard formats for messages. There is a standard format for news. There is a standard format for articles. There is a standard format for blogging. There is a standard format for radio. Basic building blocks of a message are what happened or what has to be done. What is the action? Who is affected? Who should do something? The personal, the concrete, the better. When does something happen, or when did it happen? Where and who said something? Where does the information come from? This is important because when you reach some kind of threshold, then people will start to copy your message. And you have to think about those doing cut, copy, paste on your text. A note on journalism here. Journalism tries normally to get out something that is personal, something that is addressed, and if possible, something that is negative. Because many journalists think that negative stuff sells better. But negative messages are not useful to change something because people are used to it. We are used to negative messages because they happen every day. We turn up the news, we turn up the radio, and we get flooded with negative messages. The construction of a transmission, the construction of all that is you need a lead. A lead is the headline. It's something, mostly it's just one line, sometimes few more. Put all what has to be said into that one line. The first chapter is the important because, well, mostly 80-90% of people will not read further. So what you want to say has to be at the best point in the lead, in the headline, but you should be done in the first chapter. Other chapters are for details and for teasing future messages, like showing people that there is something coming. Like reporting about a document that is written but not finished now. Things that keep people interested. If you think that there is too much information for such a simple format, then you have most probably just two options. First one is, if it's really too complicated, then write an article. Write an article and use the short news, the short format, to do reporting about the article. This gives you another enhancement. While you can write a normal and standard article with a very good and balanced view, you can do a news article where you get personal. Who wrote it? Why did he did it? So you can send additional info or split it up into several messages, which on the long run gives you something that's called a campaign. If you have all this, then you'll end it with a text. The text is more or less raw, but then you should try to apply these mantras we've talked about. First, basic checks. Are they in the text? Who did it? What is done? Why? It is surprisingly how often even professional journalists lose some of that basic checks. Then mantra checking. Does the message comply to the chosen mantra? Does it fit into the chosen role in every sentence? Because the main problem, what we are talking here about, is establishing trust. When, as it is often the case, not one people, but a few, are drafting such messages for a non-government organization or for any kind of community, then from the view of the outside, you lose some kind of stability, because from the outside it looks like, well, different people talking and not one organization. And for establishing trust in communication, one of the main important things is that your peer gets a very good view on what you are. But if different people writing different messages with for the same organization, then there is always some slight change in that. Mostly in the view, or mostly in the way the message is expressed, in the mood. Sometimes the message is more angry, then it is more amused. And this gives a very fuzzy picture of what your organization is about on the other end of the communication. The mantras are for rechecking it. Is this the correct mute? Is this the virtual identity that is speaking here? Substitution is the next trick. It's some kind of hack. It's about exchanging your phrases with phrases you know from your communication peer. Because when a community like ours, which is very familiar with computers, talks to other communities, then one of us, either we or them, will feel unsure because we are talking about something one community does not know exactly about. If we want to deliver good messages that are useful on the other side, then it's more efficient to use their phrases and to use their words to address what we want to say to them. One easy thing is just doing substitution. Just think about what kind of sentences, what kind of phrases mean exactly the same in their reality. And of course, optimization. If you have something left to say, some space left, you can also try to stuff it into the messages. Okay, that's it for now. I'll hand the microphone over so that you can ask questions.
Questions? Anyone sleeping?